Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 3-4-2 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
What's up?
Not the quick intro. All right. Well, we do not have a guest, so we will just get right into it. A lot of basketball has been played. A really fun slate of hoops on Sunday in particular. A lot of close endings there, but hectic schedule over the weekend. Steve, we'll start with you. Who are some teams that have caught your eye as of late?
I mean, it's less so teams and more so the league at large that's kind of catching my eye. I think when you look out in the Eastern Conference, there's three teams as of right now that are above 500 or 500 or above. It's just Cleveland, Boston, Indiana. Everyone else is just fighting it out. Out West, quite the opposite. Darn near everyone's at 500 or above. So I think it's kind of been fun to watch the competitive nature of this league. And you're kind of trying and working to see these teams figure things out on each end of the floor. Like, how many teams are really balanced? How many teams do you feel like you know a lot about right now?
It feels like a handful right now.
I mean, everyone's still say Cleveland, right?
Yeah, they just will not lose.
Boston, right?
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix, OKC injured, but they'd probably be in that category, right? You probably put Golden State up there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else is just kind of up and down. Like, even like the Cavs, they're first in offensive rating, they're ninth in defensive rating. The Celtics, they're sixth in defensive rating. The Boston Celtics are, second in offensive rating? Is that right? Look at me trying to deliver numbers. The Warriors, fourth in offensive rating, third in defensive rating. You feel pretty good about them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the Knicks. The Knicks are second in offensive rating, 21st in defensive rating.
Just like we all expected.
The Lakers, fifth in offensive rating, 26th in defensive rating.
I would imagine that 80 is important.
The Nuggets, sixth in offensive rating, 18th in defensive rating. So you're seeing these teams that are kind of overachieving, but also trying to figure out how to fix the other part of their team with a mix of teams that are just really balanced. Like Minnesota, eighth in offensive rating, eighth in defensive rating. Sacramento, ninth in offensive rating, 11th in defensive rating. Dallas, 10th in offensive rating and 10th in defensive rating. So these teams that maybe you don't feel so good about their start, but they're doing more things than you anticipate, which I think is really fun because once this comes out, it will be the first day of the NBA Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, have you looked at those groups recently?
It's kind of nasty. I'm not going to hold you.
It gets pretty funny. Like, West Group C has Denver, Dallas, Golden State, Memphis, and New Orleans.
Which
feels a little different than at the when it first came out, right?
I hope Memphis gets I hope Memphis also gets healthy, but I hope New Orleans absolutely gets healthy soon. Because that is a gauntlet.
let me throw you another curveball. East Group B. Milwaukee, Indiana, Miami, Toronto, Detroit.
You know what a fun free throw is among that group? Like, who feels the best about their team right now?
Might be Detroit.
And this is with, like, Indiana's had some... I'll have some player shout-outs on the Indiana front later in the pod. But, yeah, it's been kind of weird for everyone involved.
Like, Boston and Cleveland are in the same group. The top two teams in the East. Like, this has the potential to get very, very funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to salute that. It's just been fun to kind of watch these teams go back and forth and play against each other. As far as teams I'm really like thinking about, Sacramento's been on my mind for the majority of the season. I think that they are coming along at the right pace and doing what they need to do. I think you've seen examples of last year. We saw them grow in the half court, try and play a little bit slower, execute a little bit more. That really pops when you add DeMar DeRozan to this group. And you kind of see that. I saw that in the Phoenix game for sure, where, hey, you have a player that I don't think you want to guard DeMar DeRozan. We are going to put that player in action. And now we're going to play out of it. Recent stretches where they use him in the post. And Keegan Murray's one pass away. And now, okay, what are you going to do? Either DeMar's going to go to work in the mid-range, or you're going to show help that's going to open something else up for us. You have De'Aaron Fox, who I believe has scored 20-plus in every game in November so far. And you see the blend of when, okay, DeMar is cooking. And once he stops cooking, De'Aaron Fox starts cooking. And now we layer that on top of our pace, our tempo, our handoffs. The defense is reaching just a solid level, which I think is what they have to aspire to be. I don't think they're going to be top five. But for them to compete and execute and give effort on that end. It's going to give them more wiggle room on the other end of the floor. So Sacramento's really intrigued me. Obviously, I think Cleveland has done a really fantastic job this year. I think Kenny Atkinson, first coach to have won his first 11 games. So salute to Kenny Atkinson.
That's big time.
I think for me, the play of Evan Mobley has been really important for them. His drives and his ability to get in the paint outside of just, you know, pick and roll, his drives, his ability to create plays, his paint touches are key. I think that Evan Mobley's ability to just kind of make plays happen helps. And it also works because if he can initiate sets, guess who's off ball? Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. So now we can just open up a lot of things. So I think they've been pretty committed. It's tough. Like, I don't necessarily hold a lot of teams to the fire because there have just been so many injuries. You know, yeah. I think I probably give a tip of the cap to Denver, mainly for working through this stretch. I mean, Nikola Jokic has been incredible. I'm sure you'll talk about him later. But this is kind of the give and take of the regular season. We have something we need to work towards, but we've got to find a way to grind it out. And it's still not easy to win in Denver. Mm-hmm. But five straight home wins, being able to knock some close ones out. I think three of those five wins were two-point wins for Denver. And so over the course of the season, can you now get those contributions from the people you need? Mm-hmm. You know, is Peyton Watson going to have the activity defensively to kind of enhance what he does? Does he help your transition attack? Is Julian Strother going to be able to continue to have an impact offensively, play enough defense to give your lineup some juice? Russell Westbrook, I think his energy has been very good. You know, it's Russell Westbrook, so a lot of things can seem to be louder than they need to be, but I think he's good for this group as far as competing. Jamal Murray's return. So I think Denver's done a pretty good job, but it's just, you bounce around the league and it's like, you know, don't forget about Houston. Like, Houston's gotten better. How much does it mean? You know, do they need, does their offense need to go up another level in this Western Conference? But the defense is holding strong. So that's where my mind's at, where like there are a lot of teams who are competing and it's not easy to get a win every single night.
Yeah, I like that. Before I get to my teams, I actually want to toss some questions your way, if that's okay with you. With the Sacramento Kings, as you mentioned, the offense and being able to use Domantas Sabonis still as a hub and give you those post buckets while also having the wave of De'Aaron Fox and DeMar DeRozan is incredibly important. Just generally, how have you felt about the Keegan Murray season and his usage so far this year?
I mean, I feel like his usage is fine. I think for me with Keegan Murray, it's more about aggression. He has to stay aggressive and he has to understand when his shot is there and when he can impact the defense. So if he has that blend of being able to obviously shoot the ball at a high level, but also I can drive this closeout, either get to a pull up or kick and advance our offense. I can attack and try and finish in the paint, or I can mix in a post up. I think that's where it gets really fun. And so I think he's been pretty good in my eyes. What say you?
Oh, I think he's been fine. Like, it was more so for me, I guess before the DeMar move, I was just excited about, hey, what does expansion for Keegan Murray look like offensively? And naturally, once you add DeMar DeRozan into the mix, like, you're not going to get the same diet of on-ball exploration with him. And so I also wanted to get your opinion on, like, how you felt about the balance with him on that front.
Well, I think here's the thing about expansion or exploration of a role. Having DeMar can kind of help Keegan because he can do some of those things without them needing him to do it at a certain level. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they didn't have DeMar and now you're like, okay, we need this amount of growth from Keegan Murray for this to work. Okay, maybe he gets more pick and roll reps. Maybe he gets more post-ups. Is that the best thing for him? Does that change how defenses treat him? Or does he now get to develop at the same or better rate, still be highly involved, still be asked to be aggressive, but it's not like, okay, you have to get all this done.
Yeah.
That's where I think, because this is a guard-heavy group. If you're looking at DeMar, you're looking at De'Aaron Fox, what Malik Monk had done up to this point, it kind of allows him to be more like himself. To me, it's kind of just like Orlando. Where, hey, we have Paolo, we have Franz, Jalen Suggs, you can do this while we're figuring this out. That's kind of where my head's at with it.
Okay, makes sense. And then the other question, you mentioned Malik Monk, but just to toss the question your way, who do you feel best about as the fifth with Fox and DeRozan and Murray and Sabonis? Is it just Malik Monk?
No. I think the good part for Sacramento is we have options in theory. Mm-hmm. We have what Kevin Huerter can do as far as helping us shooting-wise and how he fits in our movement. We have the defense of Keon Ellis and what he can do on that end of the floor to help us that way. And then we have Malik Monk. So now we could be supercharged offensively. You got to deal with a lot of it. That optionality is not something the Kings have always had, especially with kind of having a little bit more higher firepower with DeMar, De'Aaron, and Sabonis all averaging 20 points a night. Mm-hmm. We can now mix and match to a degree, and we can balance our bench lineups. So, you know, if we want to bring DeMar in the second unit, that kind of works in that way. So it's not necessarily just Malik that I feel good about. I feel good about Sacramento having options that they can use on depending on what they need that night. I mean, I think that's the secret to the league. I think a lot of times people can get tied to, well, this player has to play this amount or this player has to play that amount. The key is understanding how good your team is. And once you get to the playoffs, it's about matchups and it's about your versatility. Do you have options? It's fantastic if you have this lineup that works so well. If it gets taken away and you need something else, can you pivot? And so I think Sacramento being able to do that is key.
Got you. And just to quickly clarify, is it just Malik was born? Is he the answer? Not necessarily is he the only guy that's playing well. So that's poor wording on my front. To add to your point, though, with Sabonis, Fox, Keegan Murray, and DeMar DeRozan on the floor together, it is a plus 15.2 net rating in over 200 minutes per PBP stats. And once you get into those fifth options, those guards that you mentioned, the most frequent option has been Kevin Huerter so far, 121 minutes with the core four. The Kings are plus 26 in those minutes, or plus 28, excuse me, with Malik Monk in. They are plus 45 in 50 minutes, which is absurd. And with Keon Ellis in, they are plus 17 in 25 minutes. So to your point, having that optionality and having all of those lineups produce at a high level is obviously going to be fruitful for the Sacramento Kings. And then just to quickly bounce off the Nuggets point, as they've been eking out these close games, they have already played 7 clutch games this season. And even with bodies in and out, Jokic being the constant, and as you teased, I do have Jokic numbers a little bit later, but the Nuggets have a 132.5 offensive rating in the clutch. Like, it's inherently a small sample as you do like the final 5 minutes and stuff. But talk about machine-like stuff once you get down to the nitty-gritty. And this is why they, you know, so they've had clutch games without Jamal Murray on the floor. You know the ball's going to Jokic in some capacity. And teams just haven't been able to get a beat on what Denver's going to do. They haven't been able to stop them late in games.
Well, here's the thing, and I don't want to step on all your Jokic thoughts, but Jokic is decisively being more aggressive in these moments to a degree, to the mm-hmm. point where if you watch the Denver Nuggets and it's clutch time, and you see Nikola Jokic decide, hey, it's time for me to get a post up, however they get to it, whether he just kind of backs down, they set a cross screen for him, right away they can get to it. Take a look at the possessions where Jokic takes two dribbles and just scans the floor. He's always looking. Are you going to help? Are you going to double? He's going to take those two dribbles. Once he sees that you are not doing either of those things, he's firing it right back to the wing. And as he's firing it to the wing, he's reposting. Mm-hmm. And on that repost, the ball is going back to him, and you have to see where he lands in the paint, and that's 2 points. And now, guess what? We're going to do it again, and now what are you going to decide to do? And that's the dynamic. They don't necessarily have Jamal, Aaron, and Jokic right now, obviously, but mm-hmm. they still have Jokic. And so that's when it comes to these clutch time minutes, when you have these type of players that can force a defense to make a decision, it opens up a lot for you.
Mm-hmm. And that is, again, incredibly difficult to deal with. You already hit on some of the young guys that are stepping up, Peyton Watson, your Christian Browns, Julian Strother. So Denver eking out the wins. I think Zach Lowe tweeted out earlier today, 7-1. In their last 8 games, and this is while dealing with all of the injuries and stuff, and they're still trying to find the defense ultimately. This team just does not die. One quick note I wanted to add on the Cavs front, who, again, they just will not lose games, apparently. I thought Brooklyn was going to pull this off over the weekend. Cleveland got off to the hot start. Brooklyn makes the run towards the end of the second quarter. Third quarter is just turnover central for Cleveland. And I was like, hey, look at Brooklyn. They were just going to be a highlight team for me at that point. Cleveland able to eke it out. One thing that I haven't mentioned yet on the Cavs front is we talked about them on the opening weekend episode, talked a little bit about Jared Allen on the last episode. as well. This zone from Cleveland, to where they'll also, they'll mix in like a traditional 2-3, but they'll also just have a guy just stationed around the free throw line, just picking up folks. Like, I've had fun watching that. More so earlier in the season than over this recent stretch, but they are still doing it. They are currently, per second spectrum, second in zone possessions played at 58, only allowing 1 point per possession on those trips, which is well below league average at this point. So I wanted to quickly hat tip the Cleveland Cavaliers zone that they sprinkle in, start a quarter after ATO, stuff like that. I've just really enjoyed that portion. In addition to Evan Mobley's been really good, Darius Garland continuing to hunt shots and watching him turn up in fourth quarters has brought me a lot of joy. Again, it would appear that a healthy Darius Garland is a really good Darius Garland. Who would have thought that a broken jaw and weight loss may affect the way that you play NBA basketball? But glad Darius Garland's back. Donovan Mitchell just makes some of the most disrespectful pull-ups in the league. You think you have a beat on him, and then it's just high elevation shot made in your face, and he's just jogging back. I don't know what you do with that portion of the program. But I think that's what I had based off of what you said. Did you have any other teams or anything else you want to toss out for you?
I'm gonna say that zone's just a 2-3 once again.
Fair enough.
It's just the bringing the wings higher to stay matched up.
Yeah, I just like the shape of it.
Kneeing on the bottom, and then Donovan Mitchell just saying, "I'll take whatever comes my way." Just my disclaimer every time.
No, that is fair. That is fair. I just like the shape of it. My eye catch. Okay. Well, with that, Steve, as you know, I am a fan of cleaning the glass and the way they filter out garbage time. There are four teams in the NBA as of recording that have a net rating of 10 or better. Do you know who those four teams are?
Golden State.
Golden State, because they got beat down by Cleveland, they're at a plus 9.8.
Oh, okay, that's not fun. Boston?
Boston is one. They are third.
Cleveland?
Cleveland is another. They are second.
OKC?
OKC, they are number one at a plus 14.
Who's fourth?
Well, Steve, the fourth team is the Memphis Grizzlies with a plus 10.5 net rating. And let me tell you about these wacky complimentary Grizzlies. One, as I said a little bit earlier, I hope they just get healthy. Desmond Bane, Marcus Smart, neither player has played in November as of yet. Ja just missed the last game dealing with like a hip issue, so we'll see how long he's going to be out. So they are one of the many teams in the NBA right now that are affected with a bunch of injuries. But this is a team that is playing a lot faster. I think, you know, pre-Ja injury, having him back in the fold, just pushing tempo, generating transition opportunities, and just in general getting into their stuff faster obviously helps. They were 17th in pace last year. They are third as of recording on Monday this year. But they're playing fast, and they are honestly, if they're not the most entertaining transition team in the league, they're certainly like top three or top four because of the antics of Ja Morant. But even without him, pretty much anyone can grab and go. And I feel like that's just becoming more prevalent across the NBA as things get more positionless and big to handle and stuff like that. But like Jaren will grab a board and push it up past half court. Santi Aldama, who might just be the best passing big that nobody really talks about, he will toss some absolute dots. What's up?
Do you want to run that by my ears again? I will make sure I process that correctly. You said what now?
Santi Aldama might be the best passing big man that nobody talks about.
All right, continue.
I was about to say, I think that the latter part is an important disclaimer because obviously I'm not arguing he's a better passer than Jokic and stuff like that. But no, in all seriousness, watching Santi Aldama grab and go, or he'll receive an outlet as Memphis, because of the injuries, they've just been tossing out a whole lot of three big alignments where like either Santi Aldama or Jaren or Brandon Clark, they'll mix up the matchups. But like one of those players are like the nominal three in the lineup. But Santi now just getting more opportunity to grab and go, and you see the passing vision. Like, he's someone that is comfortable driving the basketball. Like, this is something that has popped pretty much his entire career. You saw it last year as the Grizzlies were absolutely an injury mash unit. But this year, the volume's a little bit higher, and he's tossing some really fun stuff. The bounce passes from Santi Aldama, if you have a lead pass subscription, just keep an eye out for those. That's been a lot of fun. But overall, this is a team that's playing faster. They are playing with more movement. Like, some of my favorite stuff from Memphis this year is they do have some really fun set stuff drawn up. I think Taylor Jenkins is one of the best like set play guys in the league that we have. But when the initial action doesn't work, just watch the relocations and watch the cuts, because they do a really good job of making sure those cuts are live, but they're pairing those cuts with weak side movement. They're pairing the cuts with movement behind it. So you can't even sink in comfortably on the cut to take it away without worrying about something else opening up behind the arc. And with them having so many guys that can drive and kick and comfortable getting downhill, they just do a really good job of getting you in rotation and also keep you in rotation. So I've enjoyed the offense, and then getting into some of the individual players. Again, Ja out right now, Bane out right now. Jaren Jackson Jr., I would say that while the context wasn't great for him last year with everyone being out, the shot creation growth is pretty apparent right now. He just looks so much more comfortable creating for himself. I think it is a career low of 2-point shots being assisted on so far this year for Jaren. The drives have popped, continue to pop for me. Shooting well from three right now. We'll see how long that holds. But like, he is mixing in the self-created threes on top of that. He's more comfortable with the block. I think something that you pointed out, Steve, last year with some of the seals and him getting better at that aspect. So it seems to be a more effective post scorer as well. And then you look at some of the guards that have stepped up in the absence right now. Jalen Wells shooting over 39% from three, filling gaps. He keeps the chains moving when defenses are tilted. Scottie Pippen Jr., who had some things to say after the Lakers beat down, but he's been pesky at the point of attack. Playmaking is pop. He's also shooting well right now. And then going back to the front court, nice to see Brandon Clark just entered the starting lineup, but nice to see him filling gaps, looking more like himself athletically. Zach Edey no longer in the starting lineup, but after a foul fest in his first couple of games, he has settled in as a monster on the block. Fun pick and roll partner. I'm enjoying the seals from him after screening. He's starting to get a better feel for that kind of thing to kind of clear out driving lanes for some of those guards as they get downhill. Jay Huff, a player that's been shouted out by the both of us at this point on the podcast, continues to knock down threes. Really good screener. Swatting shots. Do you want a funny Jay Huff stat, Steve?
Yes.
He is currently one of three players averaging 1.5 made threes per game and 1.5 blocks per game. Do you know who the other two players are?
Sure don't. Who are they? Is one of them Wimby?
Wimby is one of them, absolutely. Listen, Wimby's going to take enough threes to make sure he's on that list. We'll talk about that later. Miles Turner is the other one. This is a thing that makes sense. But yeah, and naturally, Jay Huff just doing that in, we'll just say, a lot lower minute load than the other two players. So I wanted to once again shout out what he's been able to do. But no, like, the Grizzlies are finding it, man. They've had to. Like, I think a lot of young players have stepped up with all these injuries. And in general, like, the offensive flow, and at the very least, the offensive tempo feels better. The defense has been very good for them. As of recording, fifth in offense, though a lot of that is transition driven right now. They're third in defense. Not blitzing as much, not switching as much they were last year. A lot of deep drop. And not just deep drop, which makes sense when you have like Zach Edey when he was starting this year. Jay Huff has been in the drop. They've even had Brandon Clark in the drop. But they've gone back to Jaren Jackson Jr. Hey, you just play free safety. You just hang all the way underneath the basket. And if a team does try to set a high pick and roll, we're bringing someone over from the wing to try to tag that role so you can stay back there, try to help with some of the rebounding. And ultimately, we just want to make sure we have a presence and we're impacting the action without Jaren being in there. We haven't had a ton of the foul trouble games for Jaren so far. So again, I think that is something that can be countered. So we'll see what that looks like as the season goes on. But defense, and they're also just allowing a lot of three-point attempts. But a lot of that is from that high help that they're showing. So that is just kind of baked into their defensive formula right now. So that is something that can flip. As we look at, they are 28th in three-point rate allowed, but they're fifth in three-point percentage allowed. If those shots start going down, I wonder if Memphis bends at all on that front. But as of right now, they're dictating what shots they're giving up. They're getting out in transition. They are absolutely blitzing teams in transition. In fact, per Clean the Glass, they are first in transition offense, and they're fifth in frequency overall. They're getting good stuff. They're getting easy stuff. And so I just wanted to give a quick hat tip to the Memphis Grizzlies for what they're putting together.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
What have you thought about Ja Morant's season so far?
One, very happy that he's back. Two, I think I've mentioned it before, but he's just one of the most electric drivers in basketball. And like, his ability to get downhill basically whenever he wants to, with or without a screen, is nearly unrivaled in the league. Has premier passing vision on top of that. And his ability to shift speeds allows him to kind of lead the dance and pick and roll and just bend defenses. And once that outside again, the Grizzlies are generating 1.17 points per possession on drives per second spectrum. That is third among 39 players with at least 100 drives. And so, again, get well soon, Ja. Make sure he gets back. But no, he has been absolutely electric. I'm still keeping an eye on what the pull-up jumper is going to look like for him. At least inside the arc, he's pretty much more comfortable with the floater versus a pure pull-up. So it's more so looking at the pull-up threes for him. But inside the arc, he's just masterful. And I think because he can change speeds the way that he can, it makes it easier for him to kind of build chemistry with the variety of bigs that he's had to play with so far. If it's a high pick and roll, he can just kind of jet if he wants to. Or we can slow play it with Zach Edey, which allows him to kind of set those seals and get Ja deeper in the paint and stuff like that. So I think Ja's played a really good game of basketball. He's played very well so far this year.
Oh, gee, makes sense. I think for me with Memphis, the possessions where they are moving their ball and moving their bodies are good and needed for them to get through multiple actions. You mentioned the cutting, but just be able to flow, come off screens, play together. That's needed. Because the question for me with Memphis, the only one I have, what's it like in the half court in a tight game? Mm-hmm. Can you maintain these principles in a tight game against a good team? Or are you going to say, hey, Ja, pick and roll, let's hope it works? Which kind of felt like the Brooklyn loss.
Mm-hmm.
So can they balance what they found with what they have at their peak with Ja, with Desmond Bane? I think the defense feels stronger because you mentioned that help is there when they have that level of activity. It's good for them. I think they've actually done a really good job of navigating screens. So we're going to fight over, we're going to slide under if it's high. We're going to try our best to stay solid in other scenarios outside of when we're specifically giving that help.
Yeah.
So you watch a lot of teams in the league these days, a lot of breakdowns after the first set. Closeouts, tough, drives get beat, over help on the drive. Now it's off to the races. When you watch Memphis, when their defense is really humming, they're in front. They're keeping the ball in front. Everyone else stays at home. Now we play, close out, keep it in front. That's when they're doing well. They get stops, they get out and run. Now you got to keep playing against them. Mm. So that's been fun. I think Jaren Jackson Jr., the most fun possessions are when he catches at the three-point line and he looks to attack, but then he's like, actually, I'm just going to back you down and get to a jump hook, and then we're just going to play out of that. But I think there's good growth for Memphis. I think this is a team that probably needed to get off to a good start, especially in this Western Conference, because you know you don't think of it much, but 7-4, that'll build. that'll get you going in the right direction. Now, it gets interesting for Memphis because they do play the Lakers Wednesday, Gold State Friday, two games with Denver in Memphis. So we're going to see and get some answers to some questions. But I think their ability to not just defend but score points in the paint, I think the last I checked, 60 or more points in the paint in 7 out of 11 games this season. Mm. Fun fact, last year they scored 60 or more points in the paint a total of 7 times.
Sheesh.
So they are getting back to doing what the Grizzlies do.
There you go. And then just very quickly, to bounce off the half court point, they are 18th in half court offense right now. So first the transition offense, 18th in half court offense. Naturally, you want that to get better. And beating a drum again, but I would imagine them getting healthier should at least help them solve some of that half court stuff. They're also, I think, 23rd in 3-point rate offensively. I think getting Desmond Bane back will help on that clip. As I mentioned, Scottie Pippen Jr. shooting well, Jalen Wells shooting well. Neither of those guys doing so on super high volume right now. So a bit of a math thing to monitor with Memphis, but again, I'm giving them a little bit of grace until they get healthy or their version of healthy. And then on the Jaren front, per Basketball Reference, a career high field goal percentage at the rim, converting 78% of his shots inside of 3 feet, converting about 56% of his shots in floater range from between 3 and 10 feet on career high volume. And I mentioned that, you know, his unassisted field goal rate has gone up inside the arc. Only 42.6% of his twos are assisted so far this year. Just to talk about the self-creation there, that is a career low for Jaren. On Jaren drives, 1.13 points per possession. On that, that's up from last season. The driving volume is a little bit lower, but that makes sense considering some of the guys that came back this year. But him being more comfortable creating for himself, so it doesn't have to be pick and roll. Because I think, you know, going back to last year or the year before that, teams got super comfortable just switching against Jaren. And so if he's now able to take some of that stuff off the table with the improved post play, with those jump hooks, with those seals, and with those drives, does that open up the Jaren pick and roll even more? And do we get to see more of the short roll opportunities for Jaren? And some of that comfort that you're seeing, again, in the floater range where he can just get to those hooks or get to some of those push shots, does that just become a lethal late game offense for Memphis? So just something to monitor on that front. Again, just a salute to them for how they have played so far. 7-4, nothing to sneeze at. And then a super quick shout out I want to give to the Brooklyn Nets right now. 4-6, 15th in offense, 16th in defense right now. I just want to talk about a little bit about the defense because you got to tease me on the Jalen Wilson front last week. But Brooklyn, if it feels like they do full court press defensively more than anyone in the league, it's because they actually do. Per second spectrum, leading the NBA in backcourt pressure possessions around 26 per game. And then circling back to that opening week episode, we did the league takeaways towards the end of the pod, and I noted that full court pressure is up across the league. That was around 26 possessions per game. That was the league average. That is down to 24 now, so we're starting to see the league-wide dip on that front, but it's still higher than it's ever been. And the Brooklyn Nets are leading the charge. Jalen Wilson will press you full court. Zaire Williams would do so. Dennis Schroeder will do so. Just when they get to that second unit, it just becomes a lot of fun. And then quickly on the Zaire Williams and Jalen Wilson front, the Nets have a 111 defensive rating with those two on the floor, which is roughly the equivalent of a top 10 defense in 137 minutes. And the Nets actually have a plus 2.7 net rating in the minutes that those two have played together. It's early in the season. We'll see if it holds, but those two are getting after it defensively. And overall, like, I appreciate the Nets just saying, hey, I don't know how good we are. We're at least going to be annoying. We're at least going to make you bleed clock. We're going to make you work for everything that you get. So just wanted to give the Nets a quick hat tip there. Moving into the... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, very surprising that you would give a hat tip to a team that plays defense and has wings of a certain height that give up. The hipster Nets have returned.
What's the phrase from my dear pal Roby? I'm never wrong, just early.
Oh gosh,
that is you when it comes to me and the Brooklyn Nets or teams with a lot of wings. So I will take the L, but I've enjoyed watching the Nets press folks. All the teams that make us think, unfortunately, as we transition, I want to talk about the Spurs. I want to talk about Wimby, but I also want to talk about the Spurs, who are in that weird, like 8 to 14 range in the Western Conference standings right now, as they're trying to figure things out. They're 4-6 right now as of recording. 25th in offense, 13th in defense, 21st in net rating. And I've kind of reserved judgment on the Spurs just because, like, you lose Trey Jones, you ultimately haven't had Devin Vassell up until this past weekend. And so, like, I recognize, especially when it comes to Vassell, that's just a big chunk of your offense. And like some of the things that we were seeing for San Antonio offensively, particularly the rate of switches that they've been seeing, I think a part of that is just, well, y'all don't have Devin. We don't really trust any of y'all to self-create at a high level to where we need to do something else. And naturally, looked it up as I was prepping for the pod. The Spurs have seen switches on over 40% of their pick and rolls so far this year, which is easily the highest rate in the NBA. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Utah Jazz, as of recording, are the only other teams seeing switches on 30% of their pick and rolls. OKC at 30.7 and Utah at a flat 30. And so the fact that the Spurs not only lead the league, but do so by over 10 percentage points is kind of absurd, but it makes sense. And so within the context of the, how do I want to phrase it? I guess the underwhelming start for Victor Wembanyama offensively, something that I've been battling just trying to analyze things, like how much of this is Wimby process stuff versus the overall offensive context. Because early in the season, again, they're seeing the switches, but before Jeremy Sochan went down, and he's ultimately played pretty well, but teams were still just comfortable. We're just going to stash our centers on Jeremy Sochan. We're going to have a big part right at the rim. And so when you look at Wimby's, you know, percentage of shots coming at the rim, it's like, hey, he's tall. Why is he getting down there? It's like, well, they're switching everything that he does. And then he's also just meeting a big person because they don't care about one of the wings that are out there. And so, like, I don't know if it's fair to put 100% of that on Wimby. But then you also have the early offense or the transition opportunities where Wimby's taking pull-up threes and he largely hasn't shot well from three yet. And it's like, okay, well, you are leaving some stuff on the table. Like, this may be an opportunity for you to get downhill and kind of force the issue. That part's been odd. So, like, I've been trying to monitor that portion of the program. And then even going to some of the vets, I think Chris Paul is a part of that switch issue. Like teams, as you noted in particular, Steve, like teams have gotten more and more comfortable switching pick and rolls with Chris Paul, which made it funny as I was going through some of the pick and roll stuff with him. With Chris Paul and Wimby in particular, the Spurs generated 1.03 points per possession on any trip featuring a pick and roll between those two, which is above league average. On the non-switches with those two, goes up to 1.13 points per possession, which is a borderline elite number. And when they do face switches, it's 0.86 points per possession, which is well below the league average. So put some numbers to what you've been stating, like, hey, if teams are just going to switch this, what's going to happen? Chris isn't beating switches to the same degree. And Wimby, that is something that he's going to have to work through. I think more odd to me, and like some of that is just seeing like the Utah game as the most recent example. But like watching the Spurs sort through switches this year, and in particular in that game, has been kind of an adventure. And that isn't something that I super anticipated. Like they've still largely been world beaters with Wimby on the floor. But going back to the game on Utah, it is just, hey, we're going to flash someone to the free throw line. Here's a wide pin down in the corner. Let's see what you do with it. And between, there were just so many instances of two going to one person, opening something else up, or, okay, we're going to switch and then we're going to try to scram someone out. Wait, am I getting out of here or not? And then there's that hesitation. It's just like, you don't want to see those kind of things from the Spurs. So, like, it's just more so, like, they are an interesting team. Like, I think on the high end, they could be someone that crashes the play-in party if you were anticipating Wimby to perform like a top 10 player, and he still had time to do so. But it's just been a weird start. And now I'm just overall excited to watch this group with Devin Vassell back in the flow. I think it was 21 off the bench in his debut. I'm just excited to see how they build on that and what the offense overall is going to look like. Because if the defense is 13th now, and it's much better in the minutes with Wimby on the floor, if they can get the offense to average or even slightly below average, they're going to be right in the hunt for like that, you know, 9 or 10 seed. Or at the very least, they can be. So that just had some thoughts swirling around the Spurs and Wimby and some of the usage and some of the context that we've seen so far.
I mean, they're going to have to deal with teams saying, hey, we're going to switch everything that's Wimby, and hey, we're going to put our good perimeter wing on Victor Wembanyama, and you got just to make us pay.
Yeah. Which, again, on that front, like, it'd be nice if Wimby's a little bit more forceful against those wings. That would be helpful, especially if he isn't on the position where he isn't dealing with the center on insert wing here gambit, and there is room for him to attack, because he is, the turnovers are still high. But in general, like, he has the ability to make a variety of passes. Like, I don't think Wimby's a bad passer at all. And in fact, like, that was something that we highlighted during one of the rookie reports last year. It's like, holy crap, not only is he doing this Superman stuff defensively and these blocking shots he shouldn't be able to, et cetera, he can pick out cutters. Like, he can make live dribble reads. Some of these early pick and rolls have been fun. And even this year, like, watching Chris Paul screen for Wimby, like, that's been interesting to me, both in pick and roll and just with off-ball stuff. You saw it in the Utah game as well. Like, let's just get Chris Paul screening for Wimby at the wing. Wide pin down. Let's see what y'all want to do about it, as Utah has been switching a ton this year. So they have those elements, but again, ultimately in wait-and-see mode on that front. Just want to see how they build that out. And then another team that I'm naturally thinking about right now are the Oklahoma City Thunder. As we mentioned earlier, they have been elite so far this year. They have the league's best defense with a gap. Offense has been a little underwhelming. It has been kind of funny to see Shai Gilgeous-Alexander take a whole bunch of threes in the first five games. And over the last five, he's like, actually, I'm just going back to what I was doing last year. This was cool, taking all these pull-ups. Let me just get back downhill. Naturally, the efficiency jumps back up. Free throws are back up. So not super worried on that front, but I do want to see him find the balance with the pull-up. But Chet Holmgren is just going to be gone for a couple of months, which, scary fall. There's Andrew Wiggins on a drive, aggressive drive for Andrew Wiggins. Chet Holmgren falls on the hip, and he suffered a hip fracture, so he's now out for a couple of months. They're already without Isaiah Hartenstein. They are without big Jalen Williams. They are now without Chet Holmgren. This is a team that's already kind of experimented with like Usman Jang at the five. They've had like Lou Dort or Alex Caruso as the nominal five. Are they actually just going to lean fully into, we're not playing centers at all? Is that going to be the bit? Not even saying good or bad, but like, this is why they are top of mind for me, because they are at the top of the West right now. You know, same group with Golden State, with Phoenix. I'm kind of intrigued by what that's going to look like if they do decide we just have enough. We're going to force all the turnovers. We're going to switch all the things. We're going to send double teams if necessary. And offensively, we can drive and kick our way into good looks whenever you want to. I kind of want to see it. But on the other hand, I'm kind of worried about the general wear and tear of a style like that as we enter the NBA Cup and things like that. So I just have the brow raised with the Thunder and how they're going to navigate this thing. Because I don't think they need to make a major trade. Like, I don't think they need to call Atlanta, but like, hey, can we get Clint Capella? Like, I don't think it's that drastic. But I do wonder if there's like a hardship deal, or they call someone up from the G League, or so, if they do something just to get some size for some of these matchups ahead. Because they are just super small right now.
Well, this isn't anything new for the Thunder. I mean, part of the build for this was, hey, are you a wing? Can you drive? Can you occasionally make shots? Can you do some screening? Mm-hmm. You will play the five for us. That has been baked into the OKC fabric throughout this whole run. And so, to me, it's like, yeah, well, Alex Crusoe, he's going to play the five. Usman Dieng, he's going to play the five. They'll probably try Lou Dort out there. Kendrick Williams should be back at some point, right?
That's the hope.
They'll trot him out there. So I think for me, it's not necessarily ideal, but it's not new for the Thunder to a degree. Now, obviously, you know, there are going to be elements where the size is the size and it puts you in a tough spot, but that's kind of where the system comes into play for me. We know we can get to drive and kick. We know we space the floor. We know what your job is going to be. We're very comfortable setting guard screens anyways. So it's not like we absolutely have to have you do this portion of the program. We have Shea. We have Jalen Williams. We can find a way to continue to be ourselves and then mask that. I think that's one of those things where my mind is like, this is concerning. It's not awesome. Don't get me wrong. But if there's a team that's kind of built to navigate it, it's kind of like with Miami Heat. Star player is out. Win.
you mean like the game against Minnesota? Yeah, they didn't have Jimmy Butler.
It's just there are some teams where they just kind of have that within them. So I understand the concern, but if they get Kimmich back, I think they'll find a way.
Okay, I got you. And to your point, in the minutes that they played without Chet Holmgren so far this season, it's a +6 net rating per PvP stats. And then looking at the minutes with Shea and Jalen Williams on the floor without Chet so far this year, it is a +11 in 53 minutes. And the most used lineup is with Shea, with Jalen Williams, with Lou Dort, with Alex Caruso and Cason Wallace. It's 11 minutes with that group, a +-0, which is incredibly funny for the conversation that we're having. But if you can hold serve and then win in other areas, you can still ultimately win. So again, not saying good or bad. It's just, hey, this is about to be a thing with OKC's rotation. I'm excited to see how this carries out. And then the last thing I had was just the Milwaukee Bucks. Like, we've talked a good bit about them so far, so I don't want to belabor the point. But since we had the guest episode, we've had a lineup change. We've had, I think, Giannis out for a game or so, came back in. Gary Jr.'s been out. Are you more concerned about the Bucks? Would be my question for you. Like, are we getting closer to time to actually press a red button on them? Or is it still wait and see if Chris Middleton comes back or see what other tweaks are made on that front?
I think optics-wise, mindset-wise, I can understand increasing the, oh my gosh, everything has gone wrong. We're in such a bad spot. Have you seen the Eastern Conference standings? This is going to be an unpopular opinion. Truly, truthfully, don't care. Just going to have to listen to my thoughts, all right?
Okay.
They are still 2.5 games out of the 4 seed.
That is hilarious.
They're not playing well. So is this ideal? Absolutely not. I think they have some soul searching to do. They've got to figure out what they want to do on defense and stay consistent with it. Offensively, they've got to find someone, a singular soul, to be able to create something that is not named Giannis or Damian Lillard. I will once again point you to the Milwaukee Bucks assist numbers and see if you notice the trend.
Okay.
I'm just saying, literally, the Boston game. really, they scored 40 points in the first quarter, 69 in the first half. At the end of the game, 39 made field goals, 21 assists.
Yeah.
11 of those came from Giannis and Dame.
Well,
you got 3 from Taurean Prince, 3 from Brook Lopez, and 2 from Andre Jackson Jr. You got to find a way to get Brook going. I don't know if he can just be a 3-point guy on this team. You're going to have to see if you can find a way to not do the Brook Lopez, Bobby Portis lineups. I don't know if you need to do that with this group. Mm-hmm. You got to figure it out. So no, I don't think you have to hit the big red button, because what big red button are you hitting? You're here.
This is true, as they do not have, I think the only picks they have available to trade are the 2031 first and second. And they're a second apron team, so they can't like combine contracts on their own end. They also can't bring in more money than they're sending out in a trade. If you're not trading Giannis, and I would highly doubt that they pressed the Dame button like a month into the season, it's just kind of like the random thought that I had after getting the Chet news was like, hey, does OKC call Milwaukee about Brook just to see what they say?
I don't think so.
Okay. That's fair. Because, like, you know, to your point, like, it's not like Brook isn't unfamiliar with like a 5-out system, but like that is a different context than what he's been playing in. So like offensive fit may not be as clean. Like with OKC, like they had Chet in the drops. Not like Brook can do that. And he has a whole lot more speed and defense ahead of him than he currently has Milwaukee right now. So that's just a quick thought that I had. Like, huh, I wonder if they at least call and make Milwaukee say no on that front.
Here's what I'll say though, right? Mm-hmm. This is not Milwaukee, Bill. Don't want to stick on Milwaukee. I'm sure everyone's sick of talking about Milwaukee. The Chicago and the Brooklyn losses probably make this feel a lot worse. Because they would be, what, 4-6? I mean, you lost that Boston. You lost to Boston twice. You lost to Cleveland twice.
And they could have won either one of those Cleveland games.
You lost at Memphis, and you lost at the Knicks. Not ideal, but I mean, in theory, these are good basketball teams. The next 10 games are going to be where we can do the thing.
Okay.
Judge or not judge. They play Toronto and Detroit at home. Mm-hmm. At Charlotte, they play Houston, Chicago at home, Indiana and Charlotte at home, at Miami, and then against the Wizards.
Okay. What's the date on that Wizards game?
November 30th.
Okay.
This is your stretch. This is your stretch where you've got to find a way to win 3 or 4 out of 5 twice in a row. Got to get back on track.
There you go. Because if they do not come out of that stretch kindly, that leads us into December 1st. And ultimately, that means you're close to December 15th, which means even more trade discussions will happen or swirl around your organization, despite the limitations that they have to move bodies. So we will keep an eye on that front. Did you have any teams, Steve, on this front?
On what front?
I guess your opening set would have been just the teams you were thinking about. So
I mean, I'm thinking about a lot of teams. Like the Charlotte Hornet deal, which one is it? Is it the defense? Is it the offense? Is LaMelo just going to continue to not only make threes but be really tough to deal with in fourth quarters? What am I supposed to do with that? the Orlando Magic undefeated at home. No Paolo. Can they hold the water? The Indiana Pacers, I still think they're pretty good. Who's left, and can you play defense?
Yeah, no Aaron Nesmith, no Andrew Nembhard for a little bit for Indiana. After already losing Isaiah Jackson, who was playing very well for them, and also losing James Wiseman, if you want additional big man, it's kind of tough for Indiana. Yeah,
the Detroit Pistons have graduated from whatever they were last year to just fun. And they graduated from fun team to, oh, we have to learn how to win. I don't know what to do with that. What am I once again supposed to do with the Chicago Bulls and the Atlanta Hawks? The Bulls are 1-3 at home. They're 3-3 on the road. The Hawks are 3-4 at home. They're 1-3 on the road. What am I supposed to do with this information? The Philadelphia 76ers.
Who's left? Well, Joel Embiid soon come. Though Tyrese Maxey's out, and Paul George is trying to find it.
The Raptors, fun team to watch, have not won a road game.
Also, Scotty Barnes.
I think I feel pretty comfortable with the Western Conference, but these standings are going to shift. Undoubtedly, Like, I'm not as low on Dallas as some people seem to be. I think the Clippers are really fun and tough to deal with until the offense stops. I think Minnesota is having a heck of a start, but then they get in their own way sometimes. Thinking about a lot of these teams, guys. It's the fun of the season. Everyone is kind of competing. I know we're just, you know, talking about three-pointers and all this good stuff. Turn on the games every night. You're going to at least get a couple bangers. Promise you.
That's true. That's true. All right. Well, on that front, we can transition. Steve, any particular players you want to shout out?
Nekias, there are three players averaging 20 or more points, 6 or more assists, and are shooting 45% from three. Can you name them?
Oh, geez. Over 45.
I'm not going to lie. I don't think you can.
Yeah, that is. Averaging 20 while shooting over 45% from three?
With 6 or more assists.
Oh, with 6 or more assists. Okay. Surely Steph is one.
Nah.
He's not. Okay. All right. Let's have some fun with this then. 26 assists. I feel like there's going to be like a big in here that makes me mad. I'm gonna hold. Is Jokic in here?
Yes. You've gotten one.
Jokic is one. Okay. It being 20 and not 25 is where it's going to be like, 26. Actually, I don't think Tatum hits the 6 assist threshold now, but I know the 3-point percentage is different, so he's not that high anymore.
By the way, Steph Curry will be on this list. He's at 43.5.
That is incredibly tough. Is Jalen Brunson on the list?
Nope.
Darn. Is RJ Barrett on the list?
Sure ain't.
Okay. Tough. I know he's doing the playmaking thing this year. Shout out to him. I didn't know where the 3-point percentage landed. You know what? In the interest of time, I'm going to tap out here. I got Jokic.
Number two, Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah.
46% from 3, 6.6 assists.
Gosh darn it.
And Darius Garland.
Oh, see, Garland would have been one that I eventually got to.
Darius Garland, according to the tracking data from the old NBA, shooting 50% from three on catch and shoot threes on 3.8 attempts and 44.7% from three on pull-up threes, 3.5 attempts. It's not necessarily that he's continuing to be more decisive and the drives have popped for Cleveland. He's willing and hunting these shots. And if he continues to make these and make defenses pay, I'm very intrigued. Hey, Nekias.
What's up?
On November 6th, there was a player that went 7-7 from three. Do you know who it was?
I feel like we were literally watching that game in the watch party, and now I'm going to be mad when I don't get it. Darn. No, I don't remember who it was.
Jose Alvarado.
Oh.
He is shooting 41% from three on 5.6 attempts, shooting 42.9% on pull-up threes. Salute to Jose Alvarado. And the New Orleans Pelicans, who are doing the best they can with what they've got. Nekias, last question for you.
Okay.
6 players averaging 20 or more points and 8 or more assists. Can you name them?
Well, okay. Jokic is one.
There we go.
Trae Young is going to be one.
Let's go.
LaMelo Ball has to be one. No, actually, the assists are going to be too low. No, LaMelo's not going to be on the list. 8 or more.
Yep.
I don't think LeBron. Well, I guess he did just have the triple double. Is LeBron officially on the list now?
Yes.
Okay. LeBron's.
I believe there's actually a 7th.
Ah, well, that's okay. Well, I'm already calling shenanigans. That's tough. Okay, Luka Doncic.
Yep. Luka was the 7th. He just got on back up there. So you got 4.
He just got there. Okay. All right, now it's time for Nekias to miss an extremely obvious name. Let's see. Lead ball handler. Who passes the ball? No, because Tyrese is going to be, unfortunately, I don't think Tyrese is back to the scoring portion yet.
Tyrese Halliburton is averaging 16.7 points.
Yeah, so that's not going to do it. 20 and 8. Well, thank goodness I don't have to name Dennis Schroeder. You've given the assist number on that one.
Keep in mind, there's only 9 players in the league averaging 8 or more assists. You have 4 correct.
Okay. Let's see.
Hey Richie, can we splice in like a 30 seconds later bit in here?
That is tremendous content. Is Cade Cunningham on the list?
Yes.
There we go.
Yes.
Was that going to be the player that you shouted out?
Yes. You were supposed to guess him last.
I was going to say, that's a super enthusiastic yes.
Now it doesn't work as well. The other two were Ja Morant and James Harden.
Okay.
Well, very, very fitting and funny that you did not name either of those two, but we'll talk about that later.
I literally have Ja's stats just in my notes as I talked about the Grizzlies. Yeah, so there you go. That's my brain. But continue.
That's all right. Just want to shout out Cade Cunningham because he is one of four players in the league to have multiple triple-doubles this season. Nikola Jokic, Domantas Sabonis, LeBron James, and Cade Cunningham. Don't forget about Cade. Also, salute to Domantas Sabonis for having the perfect triple-double.
That is the thing that happened. It's just no misses, no turnovers, right?
It's pretty good.
That's big time. No Zubats, but that's big time. Did that conclude the player section for you?
We'll talk about Jason Tatum next week.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Well, let's circle back to Nikola Jokic real quick, as he is fourth in the league in scoring at 29.7 points per game. He is leading the league in both rebounds and assists, 13.7 boards, 11.7 assists. 1.7 steals and a block. He is converting 56% of his twos. He is converting 56% of his threes, and he's shooting 84% from the free throw line. So that's good stuff. What makes me laugh, actually, before we get to that one, he just had 37, 18, 15, and 3 against the Mavericks, which is the first time in NBA history that has happened in a singular game. In the four games without Jamal Murray, he averaged 27, 15, and 13. And the Nuggets went 4-0 during that stretch. We've talked about the clutch play already. On the year, the Nuggets have a plus 11.3 net rating with Jokic on the floor per PVP stats. It is a minus 23.5 net rating in 109 minutes with him on the bench. If I can do math, that is nearly a 35-point swing with Nikola Jokic. Now, what made me laugh as I was getting Jokic stuff together this morning? I was like, I feel like he's Jokic, so he's good at everything. But I feel like he's actually just doing everything well. Here are his numbers on Second Spectrum. 1.2 points per possession on trips featuring a drive or a closeout attack. 1.18 points per possession on post-ups. And he leads the NBA with 109 post-ups. Zubac is second at 49. 1.15 points per possession as the pick-and-roll screener. 1.11 points per possession on isolations. 1.07 points per possession as the pick and roll ball handler, and 1.03 points per possession when he's coming off of screens. He is quite literally above average at every play type that you could think of. It is stupid what that man is doing. What's up?
Are you ready for Jokic MVP?
I mean, at this rate, good gracious.
Okay. Well, hold on. Before you get too excited, too happy. Are you ready for the discourse of Jokic versus Shea when they both had to go through injury struggles?
Well, here's the thing, right? That depends on how Shea shoots. But no, it's got to be Jokic right now. And again, we are recording on November 11th. Obviously, a lot can change from now until like January, much less the end of the season. But yeah, you know I love Shea, but like, it's just Jokic right now. He is just the best player on the planet. And he's doing this in the midst of everything. It is patently ridiculous.
I've done my job here. Who's next?
There you go. There you go. Last YouTube episode talked about Miami as a team that was making me think. And so naturally they followed that up with we'll just call it a confusing week. We'll put it that way. But I talked about some of the offensive changes and how that's affected Bam and Jimmy Butler. Didn't spend as much time on Tyler Hero outside of a cursory, hey, the guards are shooting well, etc. Tyler Hero has been very good for Miami this season. 23.2 points, 5.2 rebounds, 5 assists, converting 58% of his twos, shooting nearly 46% from 3 on 9 attempts, 82% from the line. He is one of 8 players shooting at least 40% from 3 on over 8 attempts. The other 7, Norman Powell, Buddy Hield, Anthony Edwards. I think the threes are fine right now, folks. Stephen Curry, Jordan Poole, Peyton Pritchard, and Derek White. His drives are up. The efficiency on drives are also up. In fact, the Heat generating 1.16 points per possession on any trip featuring a Tyler Hero drive. That is fourth among those same 39 players with at least 100. We mentioned John Morant earlier. The other two, DeMar DeRozan and Damian Lillard. When you think back to some of the early Tyler Hero play in discourse, I personally did not think that he was going to get there as a driver to be, you know, top five in the league in terms of efficiency. Like, I didn't see that portion. Like, my main talking point with him was, hey, he needs to get downhill more and he needs to figure something out inside the yard. We know he can pull up. Can he get deeper in the paint, et cetera? He's largely answered that question so far this year. We hopefully holds. We'll see where it goes. And then the other thing that I'll toss out on the stat front for Tyler Hero, 24 players have run at least 200 pick and rolls. Tyler Hero is first in points per possession generated. Barely edging out Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Darius Garland, Jalen Brunson, and Anthony Edwards. It's 1.13 points per possession for Hero, 1.12 for Shai, and then it's 1.11 for Garland, Brunson, and Anthony Edwards. I just wanted to give the hat tip to Tyler Hero. He's played well.
Would you say he's the Miami Heat's best player?
He has been so far this year.
Who would you say is fourth?
Is it Pell Larson? No, it's not Pell Larson. Who would be fourth? I feel I'm going to give you an actual answer, but I feel like the fact that I have to think about it is part of the problem. Also, all due respect, like Tyler Hero, like soundly being Miami's best player so far this season is also part of the problem. Because ideally, you want him to play like this to complement what Jimmy and Bam do. Versus he's just been the most consistent player among the three so far this year. So once those other two are able to play, and ultimately when Jimmy Butler gets back, like ideally you get the blend and you get the best version of Miami. But, oh man, like I don't know who I would give that tag to. Like I would like to give it to Terry Rozier, but like the defense has been what it's been. And while he gets to the paint at a level that the Heat need him to, the finishing hasn't quite been there. Heat largely haven't. They just got Jaime back, but like he hasn't finished well to start the season. Defense has been kind of meh. I don't think it's a big. I have the Suns game burned in my head with Haywood. That's not fair to him. Jovic has been up and down. I don't know who I would give fourth to.
Simple answer. Kevin Love. They have not lost when he plays.
Well, you know what? Fair enough. I will say it is impressive and also concerning how much they need Kevin Love. Still,
what's kinda concerning? He's good.
He is, but like he shouldn't be the literal saving grace.
Hey man, you never know what you need until it's not there.
Hey, those are bars. Those are bars. Okay. Circling back to the player shout outs, I'll go quickly as we get to the end of the pod here. Franz Wagner, you also mentioned his name a little bit earlier, but 20 points, 5 boards, 4.5 assists. For him, start off the season strong, averaging 25-6-4. And then he got sick and then played a combined 33 minutes over his next two games. He was dealing with that. And since he's, I'd say he's on the other end of the illness. That's also coincided with Paolo being out. He's averaging 22-6-6. He has scored 20 or more points in his last four games, getting to the line 6.5 times per game, or taking 6.5 free throw attempts. One of my basketball verbiage pet peeves is he's got to the line X amount of times. It's like, well, if it's 2 per trip on a shooting foul, it's not necessarily getting there. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I've enjoyed the drives from Franz. Keeping an eye on the three-point shooting, because he's shooting very well to start the season. Got sick, hasn't regained that. Since that hot streak to start the year, he's at 26% on 4 attempts from 3. So he does still have to have a level of consistency behind the arc, but Franz has largely played well, and he's taken on more usage as Paolo naturally out and will be out for a while. Circling back to Indiana, because on a prior episode, I had him in my notes, or had him in the doc, and then just forgot to mention his name. Did the same thing with LaMelo, so I just got to read better. Hands up, that's on me. Pascal Siakam, as Tyrese Halliburton has been working through some sort of ailment, but he's just trying to find a level of consistency. Pascal Siakam has been very consistent for this Pacers group, at least offensively. 20 points, 6.5 boards, 4.5 assists. He is one of 11 players averaging at least 26-4 this year with a minimum of 7 games played. Of those 11, excuse me, only 6 have a positive plus minus. That is Jason Tatum, that's Jokic, that's Domantas Sabonis, That's Luka. It's Julius Randle, who you shouted out, Steve, and also Pascal Siakam. Post play has been pristine. They've needed his buckets, particularly in close games. So I want to shout him out. And Benedict Mathurin, who is making all the shots. He is continuing to hit people on drives. He is crashing the glass at a career high rate. And we were talking a little bit about this before the show. I was like, he's grabbing a lot of boards. I don't know how I feel about it, because like the degree in which the Pacers need the gang rebounding. And I think as of recording, I think they are bottom five in defensive rebound rate so far this year. It's like, ooh, I would like for them to get a little bit more help on that front. But he is averaging a career high 6.1 boards. And just circling back through his season, he had back-to-back 5-point games against Philly and Orlando. That was a back-to-back late in October. And in the six games since, he's averaging 24 points, 8 boards, and nearly 3 assists. He's shooting 56% from 3 during that stretch. And he just came off a 38-point game against the Knicks on Sunday, in which they just did not have an answer for that dude. And so, big picture question that we had, talked about it on the season preview with Indiana, just figuring out what Benedict Mathurin is. I think the great Caitlin Kluber sent in the question, like, hey, will he end up being a trade piece, or what's going to happen there? I'm glad he's finding a level of consistency and just generally finding his footing amongst this Pacers group. And the last couple of shout outs, I'll go quickly on those. Peyton Pritchard, averaging 16.5 points per game off of Boston's bench, shooting 43% from 3 on 9.1 attempts. He is also on that 8 player list of guys shooting 40% from 3 on over 8 attempts. He is the only reserve on, well, one of 2 reserves on that list, because Buddy Hield is also there. He leads all bench players in total points right now. He is 3rd in overall scoring average. The 2 players ahead of him are Jonathan Kuminga and Buddy Hield. There seems to be a theme with the Golden State Warriors. And then Brandon Boston in New Orleans. You gave Jose Alvarado a shout. I'm going to give VJ Boston a shout. He's firmly been in the rotation the last 5 games, including 3 starts. In those 5 games, you want to zoom out, 17.6 points, 60% on twos, 41% on threes, 93% on the line, but not high volume there. 3.6 boards, 3.6 assists, and 1.2 steals. And then the 3 starts is 20 points, 4 boards, 4 assists, shooting 40% from 3. And like, one, I love him taking advantage of this opportunity, as unfortunate as it is. Again, get well soon, literally everyone in New Orleans. But it's also in the what does this mean division, because as a self-admitted non-draft Nick, I feel like, you know, from the little that I had seen of him, like part of the slide or perceived slide for him was an element of, okay, he scores, what else? And what does he do when the ball isn't in his hands? And during the stretch, he's had the ball in his hands quite a bit and he is scoring efficiently. And, you know, just looking at pick and rolls in particular, it's 1.1 points per possession on any trip featuring a Boston pick and roll, which is very good. But it is still an element of, is he able to carve out a consistent role when some of these players come back? And is he able to perform, you know, play off the catch and also defend well enough to warrant those minutes? Because the defense has still been kind of shaky for him since he's been on the floor. But the shot making continues to perk up. He does not mind getting into a snatchback. You get him in drop, he can get into pull-ups whenever. High elevation on the jumper, so you can knock those down. But enjoying the shots going down, I do want to see what's next for him. But wanted to give him the hat tip there. I think that is going to do it for me. And then to close things out, just a general get well soon to Chet Holmgren and Kevin Durant, who's going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks with the left calf strain. Zion Williamson, who's out indefinitely with a hamstring strain. Tyrese Maxey, also out with a hamstring issue, at least 2 weeks. Mentioned Ja Morant, out at least a week with the hip injury. Jimmy Butler did not play, left the Denver game, did not play against Minnesota on Sunday. He's out with an ankle injury. Malik Monk, as that dropped literally today before we recorded, from Chris Haynes, not going to play on Monday, dealing with an ankle injury. We do get some good news. Trey Murphy III expected to make a season debut later tonight. Zach LaVine expected to come back, which would be helpful for Chicago and their offense. Asar Thompson got cleared to play by the NBA's fitness to play panel. His rookie season was cut short with a blood clot issue. So naturally, there's going to be a ramp up period, get the stamina right, all the good stuff. But we should see him in a Pistons game soon. So get well soon. Injuries stink. I just want everyone to play basketball and do so well. And then on the W front, the Dallas Wings hiring Kurt Miller as their general manager. And Jasmine Thomas, who was on the Wings coaching staff, getting the promotion to, I think, assistant GM. So excited for her. Excited for Kurt. The Aces, as Natalie Nicasse, head coach of the Golden State Valkyries. Tyler Marsh, now the head coach of the Chicago Sky. The Aces hiring Ty Ellis as an assistant coach, who has some NBA and also G League and also Team USA experience. So curious to see how that is going to play out. But those are the news nuggets. Steve, any closing basketball thoughts before we get out of here?
Nope. All thanks for joining. Hit the horns.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Thank you for rocking with us on this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We are on Apple, Spotify.
Hit the like.
Please. But no, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. And we are on the YouTube channel every Tuesday, recording on Monday, so we don't get the Monday slates. Just a quick disclaimer there. But we're also here, so subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already. You can follow me
on Twitter. Great content on the way.
This is true. This is true. Follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20.
Don't
listen to him. Follow him. He's doing great stuff. All the basketball clips. Also, if you're on Blue Sky, I think same ads for the both of us. Don't listen to Steve. Gosh darn it. But join Dunker Spot community on Twitter, or you know, just hop on over to Blue Sky. That's fine. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. The link is in the description. If you have a League Pass subscription, you can watch basketball games with us live. You also have a couple of other hosts that are hosting video game things, racing things, etc. So you get a little bit of everything in the room. But if you do want to have a safe haven to watch hoops and talk a little bit about life on the way, you can come rock with us. It's free to create a profile. No shenanigans on that front. But beyond that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Bye.